Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
This week and every week, we'll start the show with a tip of the week. Then we proceed with a low-tech item. In this case, we'll be talking about local transportation, getting around town. Our focus item this week is about meeting and dating and some of the special challenges that being visually impaired might present in that situation. And we hope you'll enjoy some of those stories. And then the high-tech item that we'll be wrapping up with is about closed-circuit television systems as an alternate method of reading if you have low vision. This week's tip of the week is using the right cane for the right situation. Now, Pete's got an assortment of canes that you wouldn't believe, ranging from huge to tiny, and our closet looks like someone's been playing pickup sticks in there. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your favorite all-purpose cane?
Well, I feel like a cane collector because I have so many different kinds, and they're all a little bit special. I guess one of my favorite ones, especially when I was living alone and using a cane a lot, was a white fiberglass cane. And what's nice about that one is it's very sturdy, so when you're in rough environments or traveling quickly, it's not prone to break. But then also, if you do run into a little bit of snag, sometimes one part of the sidewalk's a little bit higher than the next and your cane might get caught as you're tapping around, it would actually bend and flex a little bit instead of just bending and not returning to shape or breaking in half. So it was nice for that. The other nice thing about the fiberglass cane is it's kind of light, and because of its resiliency, it bounces back. So as I was tapping back and forth, walking down the street, I would tap it down and it would bounce back a little bit. So you didn't have to manhandle it as much as you would have to some other canes.
You used to have some aluminum long, stiff canes.
True. Yeah, right. Well, those are the ones I thought that would be kind of neat because they are actually a little bit lighter when you're carrying them around. But, you know, as I said, sometimes the issue with that is that if you got that caught and you were traveling quickly, and I was often running around pretty quickly, it could actually just bend in half, or and then you'd have a little crimp in your cane if you tried to put it back in position. And then also, you did have to manhandle them a little bit more. Even though they were light, you would have to, you know, they'd hit the ground, you'd tap down, then you'd have to pull them back up. So sometimes it was a little bit more stressful on your wrist. So there's some trade-offs.
So Pete mentioned that he uses these ones for rugged terrain. By rugged, in this situation, he's like being out on his own on a sidewalk. When we go hiking, he used to bring a white cane, and that turned out that wasn't quite rugged enough for that kind of terrain. And so he uses a regular hiking stick. But that also doubles a little bit as a way to let him know what kind of object he's going to be stepping on next. Our brand is Leckie, but it's a regular telescoping hiking stick.
Right. They're very light and sturdy for hiking.
But when we're crossing streams, for example, he uses that as if it were a white cane to find the next rock, because if you don't find the next rock, your feet are getting wet, and that's not so much fun.
Right. And they're also helpful with stability on rocky and bumpy terrain.
But anyway, getting back into town and off the trails, if you, for one reason or another, don't want to carry a cane, and Pete's regular canes are 56 inches long, so it's almost 5 feet, what other kind of canes do you prefer?
I guess we had the kinds of canes, the aluminum canes that were hollow inside, but they were segmented and had some bungee cord material inside. So you could actually pull these apart and fold up the segments, so you maybe had 10, 12, 14 inches or so total when it was folded up. And so that was a little bit easier. If we were going to a restaurant, for example, I would often take something like that and I could fold it up and put it under my seat and hide it away places. Sometimes with the big 56-inch cane, it was tough to stick it on the floor. You didn't want to trip people, put it in a place where it might inconvenience other people.
But even these folding aluminum canes, which work great for those purposes, get a little bit large. Right now, I've got Pete's latest and greatest high-tech cane in residence, in my purse, everywhere we go. And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, well, I couldn't resist. I heard that they started making carbon fiber canes, just like some of the fancy fishing poles. And these are really kind of neat because, well, not only is it high-tech, and I like these kind of high-tech gadgets, but they're very light. And these things telescope, so you can just collapse it down into maybe, what, 6 or 8 inches or so? How big do those get?
I'd guess about 8 inches.
But they fit very easily inside your purse or in my back pocket, a jacket pocket. Now, these are very handy when we're going places and, you know, I'll just keep one cane around in my pocket or Nancy's purse just in case I need it if we're at a museum or something like that. Generally, I'll be following her. But I wouldn't use this full-time if I was on my own because they are a lot more flimsy. They're more prone to break and things like that.
So we've talked a little bit about various types of canes. You can get these either through the National Federation of the Blind and go to their website at nfb.org, or through any of the commercial sources that we've talked about in prior shows, Maxi Aids, Independent Living Aids, ABVI, which is our local association for the blind and visually impaired in Rochester, and they're available in lots of different places. So turning now to our low-tech item, we'll be talking about using local transportation for getting around town and living where it's easier to get around, because if you're on a 100-acre farm somewhere out far away, you might have fewer options than if you're right in the middle of a city. So, Pete, can you talk a little bit about when you first moved to Rochester here and how you made a decision about where to live?
Yes. So when I first moved to Rochester, I tried to be very careful about where I was going to live, in particular in town. And so there were several things important to me. I wanted to be able to get to work pretty easily. I wanted to be able to get to supermarkets because I didn't want to starve. And I wanted to get to some of the community events. I wanted to take piano lessons and other educational things at the time. So I looked for a place. I actually lived in the so-called Park Avenue district of Rochester downtown, where there were sidewalks that I could walk every place, so I could use my cane to get around. I lived within several blocks of a supermarket, so I used to put on my backpack, I think we described it in an earlier show, and walk down to the supermarket every weekend to do my grocery shopping. I was also just a couple of blocks from a bus line, public transportation, so it was easy for me to get downtown, and that worked well for going to take music lessons or going to events downtown. And then also, it was an area where there were lots of other people at Xerox living, so it was easy for me to carpool to Xerox.
So can you talk a little bit about riding the public buses?
Riding the public buses. Well, so generally, I tried to be, you know, I would often get on the bus. First of all, you have to have someone show you where the bus stops are and where they're going, know their schedules and things like that. And once I'd get on the bus, I'd generally just talk to the bus driver about where I wanted to get off and then try to sit up front so that the bus driver could cue me when it was my time to get off, when my stop was coming up. And that usually worked pretty well.
Now, we travel a bunch. We've talked about that some. And when we've been in other cities, we've seen blind people with their white canes getting on and off subways by themselves. And I would imagine that's much the same thing. Once you learn where you're going, you just do what you're supposed to do, and that works, although we don't have any subways here in Rochester. But we do have an additional service called Lyft Line that's run by the local Metropolitan Bus people, the Rochester Genesee Regional Transportation Authority. And their website is at www.rgrta.com/LyftLine, all one word. So the RGRTA is for Rochester Genesee Regional Transportation Authority. It's a curb-to-curb public transportation service. The drivers are available to assist customers on and off the bus, but not from the bus to the door. You need to schedule your trips ahead of time, but they'll give you a ride to work, for medical, recreational, shopping, whatever. The fare depends upon the distance traveled, but it's typically under $2 for less than 20 miles. And if you have your Lyft Line ID card, you can ride the regular public buses for free, which is kind of cool. Eligibility is determined through the ADA application process, and you can get an application from Lyft Line. And just, you know, we've gotten one because just in case sometime I'm not available, Pete might want to get around by himself.
And I think there are similar services in other cities. It may not be called Lyft Line, but there are similar things for disabled people, visually impaired people.
And then more casually, there's always friends. And so when I had shoulder surgery and I couldn't drive, we had to both of us rely on our friends, and they were wonderful to us.
And would involve a little bit more planning, of course.
Of course.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
This week's focus topic is about meeting and dating. In most episodes of Viewpoints, the personal stories are all about us. It's Nancy and Pete all the time. But this week, we also interviewed another couple who are friends of ours, and he's blind and she's sighted, and we just to get another perspective.
We're fighting a match for Beth from Saugus tonight. And Beth, I want you to say hello to guy number one. His name is Glenn, and he's from Sherman Oaks.
Hi, Glenn. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fine. How are you, Beth?
Okay.
That's how they met. Glenn and Jan on a radio call-in dating show. Now, actually, her name is Jan. It's not Beth. But she used the name Beth because they were both living in Los Angeles at the time, and she did not want all of Los Angeles to know that it was she calling in. So fast forward about half an hour, here's how the show ended.
And I put Beth the test here. I said, which guy are you going to pick? And she told me, number one, Glenn from Sherman Oaks. Congratulations, Glenn.
Thank you.
You sounded pretty excited when I called you back.
I would say so.
Well, not to ruin the surprise, but they're still together. As we said, we've known them for years. And here they are. We interviewed them ahead of time and kind of scrunched down the interview into a 5-minute clip, but we think it's kind of an amusing telling of their story, how they met.
Can you describe a little bit about your vision issues?
I have none. I'm totally blind, so I was born blind.
And Jan?
I wasn't. I have good eyesight. I am corrected 20/20 with glasses. Glenn was the first person I met who was blind.
So we've heard bits and pieces of your meeting story over the years, but why don't you tell the whole story?
There was a local radio show that did a dating game on the air, and we decided, oh, wouldn't that be fun? And so I called in, and I was selected.
Well, so Glenn, yeah. How did you end up being one of the three candidates?
That's a question that I asked myself a lot, because at that point, I was doing two different radio shows in L.A. I was doing an old rock and roll show on a college radio station, and at the same time, I was doing a show not completely unlike the one that you're doing, except that in this case, it was on a commercial radio station once a week, talking about issues faced by folks with disabilities and you know, various ways of coping with those issues. I'm at home on Friday night. I was supposed to go to a party with a friend and decided not to. And I hear this really compelling woman talking on the radio. It's like, I would never consider calling in on a show like this, but she sure sounds, you know, far above par. And this, of course, was long before anything like, you know, computer dating or anything automated. It was back in 1986. So I figured, okay, I'll call in. And I'll get a busy signal, and, you know, I will have done the deed, but I will have gotten off the hook. And so, of course, I don't get a busy signal, and it rings, and they answer, and I wait a second, and I hang up. And I go through this twice more, and on the third time, I said, okay, fine, what the heck. If she picked me, I would have to discuss my blindness, but I didn't really want to bring it up early on, right? I mean, I want to be picked first and then, you know, and then be able to explain my blindness, and that really wasn't keeping me from doing many things other than driving.
He didn't tell me he was blind. He just said something about a blind date and would I mind doing the driving. So I figured, well, worse comes to worse. I don't like the date or he's scary. I could go hide in the corner and be real quiet.
What kind of impression did it make on you? Did you really understand that he was blind and couldn't see anything? Or?
The age difference bothered me a whole lot than the blindness. I had never been around anyone who was blind. So, you know,
right.
I figured, hey, it's a date. How bad could it be? We're going to have dinner. He's blind. He's not blind. We can have a dinner. It's okay. To answer the kind of question you asked about dealing with the blindness, He was very clear to me that if I had any questions, I should ask. And he said, if I'm going to have a relationship with someone, if you have questions, about anything, ask and I will tell you. So first of all, I could say it's really fun getting to know someone by Braille. I had lots of questions. You know, how do you dream? How do you take care of your money? How do you go shopping? How do you, you know, get around town? How do you do this and how do you do that? And he told me. And, you know, every few weeks I'd come up with another few questions I wondered about. And I would ask and he would tell me. He's a very independent person. He's had lived by himself. He takes care of himself. He took the bus system around Los Angeles, and it's something that a lot of sighted people are afraid to do. So it really was not an issue. I think very little accommodation was made in our household because of his blindness.
Do you have any humorous or poignant or otherwise interesting stories from dating that are related to one of you being blind?
He was wonderful. He lived in a part of the area that I wasn't as familiar with, so he arranged for wonderful dates, and I did the driving, of course, and I would come and pick him up. He would tell me where we were going. He would have perfect directions for getting there. He had reservations. He had theater tickets. He was an excellent, excellent date. He courted me beautifully, and he would call me in the morning sometimes and play music to wake me up.
Oh, that's sweet.
And how does he do that? You've been married for over 25 years.
The last time he sent me flowers was just before the wedding.
So just for the record then, how long have you two been married now?
25 years as of January 26th.
No.
Eventually, they did agree that they got married in July of 1986. It's been almost 25 years. And as you could tell from the way they were talking with and about each other, they're still happy. We tried to interview another couple who we met who has a very touching story of how they met, but they had technical difficulties, so we weren't able to record an interview with them yet. We might do that in a later show. So now we're back to stories about us. Do you remember how we met?
Do I remember? I had picked up American traditional dancing in graduate school, as had Nancy at a different graduate school, and I was at a week-long dance festival up in Boston when some friend of mine said, gee, I know this woman who's leaving Chicago and gonna join Xerox pretty soon. You should look her up. She's a dancer. And so when I got back to Xerox at work, we were still using inter-office mail at the time, so you can tell how long ago this was, and I put a little note in the mail since there weren't too many people joining Xerox at the time in the research department, and I put a little note in there saying, gee, when a new dancer gets to town, you can't hide for long, and here's when our next dance is.
And then we really met in person at the next dance, and we danced together for a long time until eventually we got married, we had kids, and then by Thursday night we were exhausted and we stopped going to the dances. But we kept it up for years. It was a great way to have fun.
But if we hadn't met dancing, we would have met in the carpool, because it turned out that Nancy moved in just a few blocks from where I lived and wound up in the same carpool as me.
And speaking of living a few blocks apart, Pete was a perfect gentleman when we were dating. And if you're familiar with the Park Avenue area in Rochester, you'll know that Park Avenue is a relatively busy street that runs up the middle of the neighborhood. That's where it got its name. And Pete lived a little bit south of Park Avenue, and I lived a little bit north of Park Avenue, and he made sure he'd walk me home all the way to the door. And we'd say goodnight. And then he was afraid to cross Park Avenue alone in the dark. And so
there were no traffic lights.
Well, right. Of course not. And so
I wanted to see you again.
I had to walk him back across Park Avenue and get back home on my own. But he walked me home first. It was very sweet.
But you talk about dating being visually impaired. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot different than just dating without being visually impaired. There were some accommodations that we'd have to make, such as, you know, this walking back and forth like that. But, you know, I said we met dancing, for example, and Nancy was very nice. She used to sew a lot, and she would make dresses. I could see a little bit at the time if things had a lot of contrast. And she would make bright dresses that would contrast with the back of the hall so I could pick her out in the dance hall and things like that.
Yeah, in fact, one of the dresses was bright yellow and one of them was off-white, and I was really pleased. And then the dance group moved to another place, and the room was kind of a pale yellow, and neither one of these dresses contrasted with the walls at all. So I was pretty disappointed. But that's kind of an interesting thing. I used to go out of my way to get solid colors, because I knew if I wore a fine pattern, with Pete's limited vision, it would just look like mush to him. Once his vision got bad enough that he couldn't even see the large solids, it didn't really matter what patterns I wore. But I always, for years, tried to wear bright colors and large solid objects.
And that was the biggest accommodation that we really had to make, right? I mean, other than that, it was just, the vision wasn't really a big issue. I mean, I think in general, and as you notice from Glenn and Jan's story, if people are just nice and share some common interests, that makes a big difference, and that's what it takes. And sometimes that magic happens and sometimes not.
I did do all the driving.
Well, that's true. She would let me drive in the blizzards when there's a real whiteout, or at least she offered to.
I would offer. And, you know, Glenn and Jan talked about buying flowers, and Glenn never bought any flowers for Jan after they got married. Well, Pete still buys me flowers occasionally, and in two different ways. You know, usually he'll just call up the florist and order them and get them delivered. But back when we were first married and we were living in the Park Avenue area, and Pete knew that we had some gladioli in my bridal bouquet. But, of course, I had just shown him the individual blossoms that were in the bouquet. And so a month or so after our wedding, he decided he was going to walk down to the local florist and buy me a dozen gladioli. Well, if you've ever seen a stem of gladiolus, these things are 3 or 4 feet long, and he bought a dozen of them. And he walked up carrying this thing. It looked like he was carrying a three-year-old, but they were awesome, and I really appreciated it.
And these days, we talked in previous shows how I do some of my shopping to keep the magic there a little bit. There's always the telephone for ordering more flowers, Amazon for ordering special gifts, and just friends from whom you can grab rides to get to the store or pick up presents for you.
Turning to this week's high-tech item, closed-circuit television systems, also known as CCTVs. Pete made great use of one of these starting in the mid-1970s through the late 1980s, when his vision was in the right range for using that tool. As his vision deteriorated further, he was lucky that other tools such as screen readers had been invented, and we talked about one of those a week or two ago. But at the time, his CCTV was truly enabling for many tasks at home, at school, and at work. So you first got one when you were a graduate student, right?
Yeah, I had been a graduate student for probably about a year or a year and a half or so, and had mostly been using recorded books from Recordings for the Blind and things that some of my colleagues were reading to me on tape. But the CCTV was a real enabler in terms of getting access to the research materials that I needed, reading my textbooks. And these were great. They were big and clunky at the time. The cameras were probably a foot long, whereas nowadays they fit in your hand. But I was able to blow up the print anywhere from an inch to several inches. These would have capability for reversing the contrast. So I found it a lot easier to read bright white letters on a black background rather than the usual black on white. These days, these TVs, many of them come with color capabilities. You can change the colors, change the contrast, magnify over bigger ranges. So maybe you want to talk about some of the products that are available these days.
Sure. Number of people sell these. There's a sapphire portable magnifier. The best on-the-go low-vision reading magnifier. Sits flat for document reading.
So this isn't exactly a reading machine, but this is a sort of an electronic magnifier. The technology's really improved in terms of getting some of these things to be a lot smaller, more usable, and portable.
And this one actually has a built-in writing stand. So if you want to write under the camera in the magnified area, you can do that, and you can see what you're doing, which is kind of convenient, you know, if you're trying to fill in a check or whatever.
Yeah, sometimes that takes a little bit of getting used to. When I used to use my closed circuit TV system, I'd be well, for sometimes doing my mathematics and writing checks or just writing documents. You're used to looking where you're writing, but in this case, when you're using one of these things, you're writing, your hand is underneath the camera, and you're looking at a TV screen, not necessarily where your hand is. So that takes a little bit of a different coordination. And actually, one of the funny things that happened to me occasionally, I would mostly use pen because pen gave better contrast on paper, but sometimes I'd use a pencil. And then you'd go to erase what you wrote on the paper, and you'd wind up with a little fuzz and stuff that was left after you'd erased something. And sure enough, I'd blow at the screen, which didn't get rid of any of the little eraser crumbs. So you'd have to learn some different skills. It takes a little practice.
So another one is the Onyx. I guess this is a series because there's topaz, onyx, sapphire. They're all different gems.
Right.
This one's bigger. It's got a swing arm that you can use for even projecting onto a wall if you want, or for displaying on a local monitor that you've got.
Right. So I think some of these, you know, a student may use if you're sitting in the classroom at your desk and you want to see what's on the blackboard, you can point this camera at a blackboard and show on your screen, which is closer to you, what's on the blackboard, or if you want to look at something else further away. There are also desktop versions of these things if you don't need the portability. There are handheld versions that are pretty small, but they may tend to be more expensive. And right. I would say these things range anywhere between, what say, $1,000 to $2,000 or $3,000, depending on the features. Some of them will actually even connect to your computer and perform double duty, so you can use them both as a reading machine for reading books and for writing, but then you can also, instead of having a separate monitor or TV screen, you can actually connect the output to your computer screen. So you just essentially have a little camera as your reading device and read the material on your computer, which you might have anyway.
And if you're interested in any of these particular products, the Topaz, the Onyx, or the Sapphire, you can go to Freedom Scientific's website. So that's freedomscientific, all one word, .com/products/LV for low vision. And then there will be a list of all of their different products. And you can look up whatever detailed information you want for Topaz or Onyx or Sapphire.
And there are a number of companies that sell these types of devices. If you're interested in other companies, you know, just Google CCTV for closed circuit TV system.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about getting yourself a handicapped parking permit, which is allowed if you're visually impaired, even if you don't drive. Accessibility features for laundry and kitchen appliances. We'll be talking about another source of accessible reading material, and next week it'll be Bookshare. And then the high-tech item will be Skype, S-K-Y-P-E, which is a way you can do audio or video telephone calls over your computer. And this is actually how we recorded the interview with Glenn and Jan. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout, that's all one word, at WXXI.org, or call us at 585-258-0333. We'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.